Hey, Los Angeles. Are you looking for unique 4th of July plans for you and your friends or family? LA's greatest rivalry returns to Rose Bowl Stadium for a July 4th edition of the El Tráfico soccer matchup as the LA Galaxy return to their original home to defend their turf against LAFC. Last year, a record crowd of over 82,000 fans were on hand to witness the Galaxy victory. That's July 4th at Rose Bowl Stadium. Guaranteed fireworks both on and off the field and a celebration for all of LA. LA Galaxy versus LAFC, the Rose Bowl edition. Tickets at lagalaxy.com/tickets.
Welcome to Now, No Opportunity Wasted. I'm your host, Angelica Ross. It's been quite a week. There has been so much going on, but I had actually a pretty good day today. Today is Sunday. I film my podcast mostly on Sundays because I try to wait and see what's about to happen before, you know, just before I go ahead and hit submit and publish the podcast, you know, because you never know what's going to happen and what sort of news breaks. So I want to kind of be just right on the edge of things. So before we kick things off, let's start with our word for the day from Buddhism Day by Day, Wisdom for Modern Life by Daisaku Ikeda. When you're listening to this, it's April 8th, and the word says, Nichiren writes, if you light a lantern for another, it will also brighten your own way. Please be confident that the higher your flame of altruistic action burns, the more its light will suffuse your life with happiness. Those who possess an altruistic spirit are the happiest people of all. So I'm just going to take a moment and just take a deep breath for a second. You know, I've really been trying to figure out the balance of scripted and unscripted, especially, you know, because I want to be as transparent as I possibly can with what's going on with me, you know, now what? Not just what's going on in the culture and in society, but, you know, with myself as well, because I want to sort of be able to model by example and share what it looks like to power your way through your challenges, not with perfection, but just with the consistency, just with the spirit of never giving up. It has been really, really hard. As you see, like I am in a new space right now. I'm just on the second level of my house. There's three levels. And I wanted to move where I chant. This is where I chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo for those who are watching the video. And it has taken me several months. It's April right now. I moved back into my house in December. And my tenant, I had a tenant in my house while I was out living in my apartment in LA, and their lease was up in December. And so when I moved back, they weren't quite ready to move out. And I was really, really nervous because, you know, my realtor and people were telling me, like, I guess renters' rights kind of favor, you know, the lessee or the person who's renting. And, you know, even though their lease was over, like it was up, and I told them months in advance that I would be moving back in, for whatever reason, they had not made finalized plans to move out. And so basically I had to stay in a hotel for a few days while they figured out their next plan. And, you know, I mention this because I'm trying to figure out, you know, and I am going to share more and more of what really happened and what was really going on. But what's really most important about what I'm sharing is to understand that the reason I chant is, again, to bring that Buddha nature and that Buddhahood to the forefront. So I respond out of my higher self and not from a lower place, you know, and when I was chanting during this time, I just kind of reminded myself that this must not be an easy situation for my tenant either, trying to regardless of what the situation is, now scramble to find a place to live. Again, I gave ample warning. The lease was up. The dates on the lease. There's so many different things. But I still did not want to add more stress to the situation. And so I was patient. I was staying at I think it was like a DoubleTree down the road from my house. And what was so odd was while I was staying at that hotel, it was something going on at that hotel and parking was just insane. I could not find a place to park. So I had to park kind of over this divider. I was unsure if I was parking in the right spot. So I ended up waking up in the middle of the night to a loud boom. And there was a car that exploded in the parking lot that caught on fire. And all the cars that were right next to it, to the left and the right, were on fire. And my car was about 6-7 spaces down away from where the fire had happened. I was looking for parking where those cars were, but there was no parking available. All I can say is there was just such a benefit. And I really do believe that, you know, as inconvenient as and inconvenienced as I was throughout this process, you know, I really kept a good attitude. And I believe that things could have been worse, right? Like my car could have been one of the cars that caught on fire with my stuff in it that, you know, now again, I took most of the stuff out of there and brought it out of the car and put it in, had it in the hotel room with me. But there was some stuff I still left in the car because I was thought I was moving back into my house. So I had a lot of my stuff in my SUV. So I tell that story to say that it has been a journey. And people have been talking about my life and my business as if they really know what's going on. I didn't really respond to a lot of the stuff that people were saying about me as I was moving. You know, folks were talking out the side of their mouth, talking about Angelica couldn't afford the rent in her house. She was paying $10,000 a month in rent and was living above her means, and that she ended up kicking her roommate out because she had to move out and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, I can't tell you guys enough, like, the situation and what really happened, you know, it just really broke my heart. It broke my heart. And I'll go more into detail over the course of this podcast because I don't want to take up too much time with this. But, you know, it really broke my heart because the reality of the situation was, yes, I was paying $10,000 a month in rent for the house that I was renting. But that's because I already have my home, which I'm in right now here in Georgia. And I rented it out because I was in a 7-year deal with FX. And it didn't look like anytime soon that that was going to change and that I was being booked basically for season after season with American Horror Story. So anybody that knows me knows that when I have opportunities, I not only take and make the most out of my opportunities, but I also try to create opportunities for other people. So me getting that house there was to get extra, not only to, I thought that this was a way that I could have my production headquarters, which because as you see, like I have a camera, I have lights, I have microphones, I have a recording studio. I record all my music in my own studio. Many interviews that I've done, whether they be podcast interviews or like, you know, different, like I've done all interviews with Tamron Hall Show virtually, or I've done interviews with, you know, the OWN Network virtually. So I've had to have the equipment and the space to be able to do so. And it is a lot doing all of this by myself. I'm right now doing all this by myself, but it's not because I want to. It's because I'm kind of rebuilding, and I've been rebuilding my team because I have people that I trusted that I realized I could not trust. They sold me a story. They sold me a story that they went to school for television production. You know what I'm saying? Like, and look, I knew from the beginning that it was a probably a community college program, but I wasn't like looking down on that. I was like, listen, if she went and did the work, then I'm going to try to provide her with an opportunity. And it wasn't like I was starting her at the top. I was starting her at a production assistant level. And so she had other people to report to that were working with me. And Twiggy Poochie Garcon, hey Twiggy. Twiggy was one of the people that was working with me as a producer. Twiggy has helped me produce several sizzle reels that we have been shopping, unscripted television shows that we created to networks. We've met with all kinds of networks, and Twiggy has helped me with a lot of that producing. And so Twiggy was one of the people that she was reporting to. After a minute, Twiggy was like, girl, she went to school for television production. And Miss Twiggy was like, it's giving certificate. That's what they were saying. Not me. I was trying to. And then when I realized that she has certain shortcomings, I did everything to give her the resources to kind of build her skills. Access to LinkedIn Learning tutorial videos for free, because apparently she didn't know how to use Google Drive. And so that was a whole thing. So, you know, it just turns out that what she sold to me as what she could do, she really couldn't do. And now I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to keep her on staff and keep her paid. It just was a lot of things. And again, I'll go more into the story at another time. But basically, the reason why I say this is that I just let everybody go. I was like, I'm sitting here paying y'all salary. You, Miss Thing, is also getting full health benefits and room and board. So to be a production assistant, and just was complaining and was always on their phone, on an earpiece, and, you know, all throughout the day during work hours. You know, and then when they couldn't, like, I was trying to have them help me put up lights and do microphones and do all this stuff, and they just didn't. I was like, okay, how about you help, like, maybe do the grocery shopping and, you know, maybe be the house manager. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can help make sure that we're stocked on these things when guests come, when certain things happen, you know, like, you can take on those responsibilities. And that gave her a sense of like responsibility or whatever. But when I said house manager, she thought I meant people manager and started like telling everybody else what to do when she didn't even really know what she was doing. You know, and it was just going on like a power trip and was doing certain things. Or I had to sit her down, I don't know how many times, and talk to her. So much inappropriateness happening. I had celebrities who were my friends staying at my house. And since she was the house manager, you know, they could go to her if they needed anything. But then she started getting inappropriate and asking for their cell phone numbers in ways to like, can I introduce you to my friend? And asking them, do they know if anybody's hiring? Doing the most. And also then saying like, you know, because my friend called me up and was like, hey, who is this? And I'm like, you know, she's a Black trans woman that I'm trying to give an opportunity to, you know, she's an older trans woman. And, you know, I looked up to her and I'm really trying to give her opportunity. He was like, well, do she know that you and I are friends? And I'm like, well, I think so. And he's like, well, I mean, he's like, she's just like asking me if I know anybody who's hiring. And she just kind of just talking negative and like, she can't wait to get up out of here. It was just a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm just like, and this was when I was on Broadway. When I got back from Broadway and I realized that there were cobwebs, I realized that the basics weren't being done while I was away. Just all kind of stuff. I was just like, you know what? Y'all can go. I'm letting all of this go. And because I was just doing so much by myself anyway, all the things that so much of what I had asked to be done, I was redoing myself. When I moved out of that big house that I had housed everybody in, I packed up almost that whole house by myself, my own. I had a little bit of help. but I packed up most of that house by myself. And so much of what I had asked to be done in the garage of that house was still there. Never had been done. So I'm sitting there, I get to the garage and I'm like, well, I got to do this too now as I'm packing. And a sense of peace came over me. As much as people want to talk about my money, what I got, what I ain't got, what I do have is my own peace. What I do have is my own home. I never had any roommates because roommates pay rent. I had one person who was kind of paying rent, and I say kind of because they were also, I also offered them the ability to work for me and make up hours and do certain things, you know, for their rent. So sometimes they pay rent and sometimes they just work for me. Don't believe everything that you hear on these streets, first of all. Second of all, it is literally taking me to right now to be comfortable and have some balance while doing this podcast. Have been juggling my butt off. I say butt off because I done told myself that I am giving up cursing. I'm stopping cursing and I'm going to do better and I'm going to challenge myself to do better. So y'all done heard it here right now. I am done using the curse words. Well, personally, if I may, you know, in an acting role or something in the future and I have to curse, then I'll do that. But personally, as Angelica Ross, I am going to try to be impeccable with my words and do a little bit better when it comes to that. All right. So so much is going on right now. And one of the things that is going on right now is that there is being a push to embargo Israel. Now, I actually, to be honest, had to Google what is embargoing Israel. And basically, I think it's basically putting a stop on, you know, goods shipping in and out of Israel because right now they are a threat to peace, to world peace. And Al Jazeera had just reported that. I know that I have been tagged. I am reposting. You know, I am in step with so many activists who have been making noise from the beginning and who have been posting and reposting and educating each other about what's going on. And so when they say it's time to embargo Israel, and that's one of the things that we might have in our toolbox to maybe stop this genocide, then we've got to use everything in our toolbox. So I'm calling up on everybody to push President Biden. Email the White House right now. Email the White House and ask them to embargo Israel. Right now, our politicians are finally being verbal about their disappointment with Netanyahu. Chuck Schumer said Netanyahu, Bibi Netanyahu, has lost his way. Joe Biden and others are finally speaking up. So while they are speaking up about their frustration, let's continue to push. Let's contact our representatives. Let's contact the White House and tell them to embargo Israel now. Now, let's move on to a conversation. There's so much that we just don't know when it comes to sexual assault. I think that so many people correlate sexual assault with something violent, like somebody like forcefully doing certain things. And yes, that is sexual assault. But there are so many other factors that play into what is sexual assault. One of those being consent. And one of those is that y'all have to learn that consent changes. I had to come to my own understanding of my own sexual abuse. In realizing that I didn't ask for it, it wasn't what I deserved. When I said no, he should have listened and stopped, but he didn't. And you know, I feel like there's this element where, you know, sometimes when you are dating folks, especially when you're dealing with men, you know, there's this like kind of banter, sexual banter that's back and forth that's like, oh, you talking all that stuff now? And, you know, I think that so many dudes look at sex and giving and D-ing women down, you know what I'm saying, as a way of like, you know, they call it like, I'm a hurt it. I'm a beat up the booty. Look, y'all, I'm trying to make this as clean as possible. You know, so they talk about like, I'm a beat it up. And sometimes, you know, as someone who is has been on the receiving end of things and being a bottom, right? Sometimes it's a little painful, right? And but sometimes that it you know, sometimes you're like constantly gauging, is it too pain? Is it pain good? Is it, does it feel good? Does it not feel good? But either way, that's something that I have to gauge, that I'm gauging. So there might be a moment when I'm telling you, okay, I thought I could handle it, but I can't handle it anymore. I need you to stop. No, you're going to take this. No, I'm telling you to stop. Please. No. So he just held my hands down and kept going. And I had to just like kind of give way in that moment and kind of disappear for a second. And afterwards, you know, it's just like, it's such a confusing moment because I invited him in. I invited him into my bedroom, but I did not want that. I had this conversation, a difficult conversation with my father. I was telling my dad about this because, you know, there was a moment when we were talking about, I remember when Mike Tyson or whoever it was had somebody coming into his hotel room late at night. And there was this, you know, there was these charges of sexual assault and all this kind of stuff. And I just remember my dad at the time saying, you know, well, what does she expect going to a man's hotel room at early in the morning? And I even remember when I transitioned, my dad telling me, he was like, well, you know, you're going to have to deal with a man and their drive, you know, and when they want to, you know, you're going to have to. And I just, the conversation, I'm thinking about it and I'm like, I'm going to have to what? I'm going to have to oblige. And there's so many women that I'm like, this ain't new. I'm not telling y'all nothing new. This is something y'all heard before too, that if you get him hard, you better be able to do something about it. Not that he needs to have self-control, that it's my fault. I did that. So now I need to get a put up. It's me. It's on me. That day is over. That day is over. It wasn't my fault. If you were a victim of sexual assault, it was not your fault. People need to be held accountable for their actions. And I'm telling you right now, I believe I am continuously learning to understand and believe in abolition. So it's not that I want to see our people behind prison, but I want to see restorative justice. Those who have created harm, I want to see you. I want to see you voluntarily wear the scarlet letter. I want to see you use the rest of your life advocating so that people understand what sexual assault is and understand how to take personal responsibility for themselves, how to control themselves, how to not inflict their own desires and violence onto other people. If we lived in a place of restorative justice, I'm not going to go there because y'all not ready. Y'all not ready for this full conversation because there are so many people who are confused about people, men that they've looked up to, thinking that they ain't never done nothing wrong because they weren't officially charged. And because that man didn't go on to be an advocate afterwards, kind of just swept it under the rug. No. We not letting y'all sweep stuff under the rug anymore. I'm bringing that stuff up every chance I get. If you don't bring it up, I'm bringing it up. Because you need to be an advocate. From this day forward, if you have created harm, whatever that harm was, you now need to be an advocate. To say, and I'm not saying that you take up space where people who are survivors, you don't take up space for survivors, but you use your platform, your space, your time, your energy to be an advocate, to make sure that young boys know, understand what consent is. That young genderqueer, non-binary, no matter what their gender is, that they understand that consent is theirs to give and that it can change at any time. So many things that we don't know about sexual assault. There's so many moving parts. One of those moving parts is trafficking, human trafficking. My next guest, Taina Bien-Aname, is executive director of an organization that addresses the trafficking in women. We had an riveting conversation that really challenged my own understanding as someone who has come from the adult industry, who has come from something that I used to coin as sex work. And I'm now challenging myself around that term a little bit because of my conversation with Taina. Take a listen. Today's episode is so special. I have an amazing woman who has done amazing things with her life. Please welcome to the podcast. Please welcome to now, Taina Bien Aname. How are you today? How are you? Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. Such an honor to be here, Angelica. It's wonderful.
Listen, it's such an honor for me to sit with someone like you. And I say this because I grew up Christian, but to give context, I practice Buddhism. And one of the sort of core elements of Buddhist practice is dialogue. And it's the dialogue that we have with each other, especially those who have had an interesting journey, a journey that has seen some things and that has done some things and that has overcome some challenges. And I know that you are just one of those folks. You are someone who has been awarded and recognized for your work with women in sex work and women who have been sex trafficked and all these things. But I know that you are someone who did not do this for the accolades and for the awards. Why? Why did this work call you?
It's a very heavy question. And, you know, thank you for asking it. And thank you for inviting me to dialogue. And congratulations on your podcast and your amazing
you so
achievements
much.
Yourself.
I
was a fan of Pose, so
that
was wonderful. And we can talk about that in a little bit.
Yes.
I think like many women like me or advocates who work on issues of social justice, whether it's women's rights, equality, racial justice, we often, I mean, when I talk to some of my colleagues who have had similar journeys to mine, we live with our ancestors. I know that sounds, loosey-goosey, but I am a first generation American. My parents were Haitian. My grandmother was a suffragette in Haiti. From a very, very young age, it was clear that that I had a responsibility to continue what our ancestors, especially the women in our long line of history, and not just in Haiti, but Africa and the diaspora, that we had a responsibility to just continue this journey, because it is a long, long journey. And I think it's also important for us to remember that we're just tiny cogs in a very big wheel. And so when we're on this earth for very little time, and if you do have a calling, and I think all of us have a calling to do the right things, to seek justice, to want this world to be a better place, if not for us, then our children, our neighbors, the planet. I think if we have the luxury and the opportunity to do so, you just do it. That it's in the DNA, because the work is hard, as you know, the work is really hard. So it's like, why would you do this unless the spirit just told you to do it every single day?
But so you are the executive director of the Coalition Against Trafficking, right?
Yes.
And trafficking in women. I want to specifically touch on the word trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
I want to touch on that because also I know you know this too, as someone whose parents have been immigrants, as well. I don't think people understand some of the core elements of what it means to be trafficked. And I say that, and the reason why I wanted to talk to you so much is because, there was a moment in my life when I realized, I know I was reading my sister's book, Janet Mock had a book, Redefining Realness. And in there, she talked about sort of the shame that some of us women who have sex work in our path to womanhood, for some of us, especially as trans women, it seems to be almost like a general stop for many of us trans women on our way to womanhood. But what I realized in a moment that there was a huge force that was trafficking trans women into sex work. And I didn't understand that until I understood some of the core aspects of trafficking, which is a high level of coercion, which has to do with also telling that person and convincing them that they have no other choice. What else are you going to do? You don't have the right documents to get a certain job. And if you did, when you get on that job, they are probably not going to treat you right and harass you until you're ready to quit. So, sweetie, what else are you going to do but do sex work? And so, made sense to a lot of us that especially as a trans woman, where I'm being called every name in the book, you know, in these certain jobs or what have you. But in sex work, I'm being called beautiful, and I'm being and there's this element where I'm being valued, and having this conversation, this authentic, clear conversation with myself about the price that I am paying and the price that others are paying, and not lying to myself about that exchange, because it is in sex work sometimes that I have found some of the most integral folks, because they are very clear on what's happening, versus folks who are in relationships and sometimes in marriages where they are prostituting themselves, in corporations where they are prostituting themselves because the price is right, but they're lying to themselves about the exchange of what's happening. So I think that this conversation around sex work and around trafficking has so many layers to it, because people come to those moments differently. What can you tell us about trafficking that you feel maybe most people don't understand or get? Because I think that sometimes people think that folks who end up in sex work ask for these things, deserves, you know, just they have all these different ideas about what this is. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about trafficking?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the word is very complicated, or it brings a lot of complexities to people. But trafficking is just, the way I explain it, is just a vehicle. So human trafficking has existed from millennia, right? So it's in the Bible. This country, the United States, was built on human trafficking. It is something that has been with us for many, many years. But it's just, look at it as a train, through which you've got exploiters bringing their prey to an end destination. So people are trafficked for labor, they're trafficked for sexual exploitation, they're trafficked for organ removal, slavery, servitude, and everything in between.
So I just want to pause for a quick second, because I guess that's a real thing, right? I guess that they're trafficked for organ removal.
Yes, you can be trafficked for organ removal. Yes, it's
because it seems like one of those things that you scroll and you see some stories about it or whatever, and you like, that can't be.
Yeah,
that can't be real.
Yeah,
and it is.
Okay. Not only is it real, but it's in international law. So it's like you can be trafficked. Like, this is what traffic, and then you use means, right? So a trafficker, who could be anybody at any time. The other thing is, people believe that there's movement involved in trafficking. There's no movement involved. You could be in the South Bronx, have never left your building, and be trafficked from one floor to another. It does not require physical movement from state to state or from country to country. So it's basically an act of someone that uses different means. And you talked about these means. So coercion, deception, could be force. Could be, you know, the lover boy situation, could be the father of your child, could be your next door neighbor, whatever, who is going to exploit you for profit. So that is what trafficking is. So it's, when you look at, and sort of my expertise is trafficking for the sex trade. So trafficking for purposes of exploitation, As you know, we talked about this, like, we don't use the term sex work because it was a term that was coined by people who had personal and financial interests in the industry. We can trace it back. I won't go into all the history, but you put these two words together, right? Because sex is something everybody wants, right? It's part of being a healthy human being. You want it for pleasure. You use it for procreation. And then you have work on the other hand, which is something that we need to survive, to put food on the table. We want it to be a place where we feel good about ourselves, right? Where we have dignity, where we can grow in a profession or in your passion, whatever it is. You put them together, and what it does, and again, with all due respect of how you define sort of your experiences, how you define yourself, but you put those two words together, and what it does is, first of all, it's a brilliant marketing slogan.
And I really appreciate you breaking this down, because honestly, I have not heard this perspective. So I'm all ears, because, you know, you say, you know, sex is something that, you know, all people want. But I even also know, I guess, that, you know, folks are asexual, but not only by nature, but even I think, and I'm not saying that I'm asexual, but I just think that, like, through the development of my life, I feel healthy in that space, but I also feel less focused in that space as our culture is. Right. I think our culture is so sexually focused. So I wanted just to acknowledge, I know that some people, you know, some people are asexual, and that is not something that they desire, but I am fully paying attention and all ears to this, because I am listening and I want to learn.
So, yes. So then, but what it does, and what the term does, is that it erases sort of the experiences of violence. It erases the whole profit-making machine that's behind it. It erases the third-party exploiters. It becomes a story about her. Like, does she enjoy it or not? Is she 18 or not? Was she trafficked or not? Those aren't really the questions that we as advocates trying to put pressure on governments and on the state to invest in human beings, to value human beings, to make childhood something you survive, but something you thrive in. So what it does is, like, oh, it's all about her. Like, we're going to put all the burden on her. And if she doesn't like it, she'll leave. Meanwhile, we all know sort of the harms that serial sexual invasion by people you don't know, who are mostly men, right? Because 99.9% of sex buyers are men. We haven't really, as a society and as a government, really grasped sort of what are the harms that were done to the people who were bought by strangers repeatedly every night. You know, some people are, I mean, I don't think anybody who is in the sex trade is privileged. I know some of my colleagues say, well, you know, you've got a few privileged who go in and out, who are cam girls or do this, that. I don't think so. We have to look, especially as people of color, as people of African descent, we have to look at the system of prostitution as something that was invented. It's not inevitable. And so the role is, it's not about whether somebody has no choice or decides to do it on their own. It's like, what does this mean for society? Because if a government says, this is a job for you who are homeless, rejected from home, you know, in the foster care system, displaced for whatever reason, you were incested, suffering sexual violence, like, we're going to reserve this for you. We're going to throw you away, and we're going to just market you for the pleasure of others and the profit of this massive multi-billion dollar global industry. So it's a question about what do we want for ourselves? What do we want for children? What do we want for our society? You talk about vision. You talk about peace and security. I mean, it affects everything. And then when you look...
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Look at the population of who is in the sex trade. Then we can start talking, right? So Black women represent 6% of the population in the United States. In most jurisdictions where there is a vibrant sex trade, they represent over 50% of the population that is being bought and sold. Indigenous women and girls represent 1% to 2% of the national population. If you look at Canada or states where they have Indigenous populations, over 70% of them are in prostitution. So you just think, what's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with this picture? And so those are the questions that we have to ask ourselves. And it's, again, not about an individual choice or not. It's about the role of our government, right?
Yeah.
We have to remember where we came from and how the enslaved population was exploded. During, 1808 was the end of the transatlantic slavery, so you couldn't bring anybody else from Africa. So between 1808 and then 1865 with the Emancipation Proclamation, there was an enslaved population that grew fourfold. So it was from 1 million to 4.5 million. And how do you think that happened? It was the rapes, the forced pregnancies, and the prostitution of African women. So that's the legacy we have to think about in this country. And what are we saying to our Black siblings who are disenfranchised and vulnerable that this is perfect for you? And then the other part is that under the law, anybody who finds themselves in the sex trade under the age of 18 is by legal definition a sex trafficked child. So it's not a legal status that disappears when you turn 18. Something that is with you. So you don't graduate to become all of a sudden a consenting, sex worker, which I use in quotes, right? So those are the things we have to recognize and wrestle with. And it's a battle.
Listen, you are speaking to me. You're speaking to me because, wow, I'm sitting here and I'm listening and I'm just so grateful for this conversation because I am an advocate for humans, for humanity. And, it's funny because my management would say, people would book me to speak and do all this stuff or whatever. And they were so quick to always say trans rights advocate, or trans rights activist. And I would just be, listen, don't let them do that to me. Tell them I'm a human rights advocate. If they're going to use advocate or activist, I'm a human rights advocate. And so for me, it is about understanding the human experience at all intersections, at all levels, and trying to bring bring out the humanity at those intersections, to bring out more humanity. And so, I have studied in this space. There's a woman by the name of Carolyn Miss who wrote a book called Sacred Contracts. And she also wrote a book called Anatomy Energy. It's Anatomy of Energy, I believe is what it's called. And she talks about how the human experience, how we have these archetypes, the child archetype and the victim archetype, and also like the prostitute archetype. And she was talking about how in these archetypes, there is sort of like a shadow and a light side, or there is a, and what that looks like, I believe, is obviously a dark side as well. Again, when I say light side, I almost mean like awareness. I mean like it's not in darkness, you know? And so they talk about the sacred prostitute. And that's when I was talking about this sort of, this space of, and they even talk about like, I think folks who have, I want to say physical disabilities or various disabilities who engage in prostitution or sex work or sex workers to feel the only touch they get to feel, you know, because their identities don't allow them participation in sort of socialized touch and relationships and things like that. So, you know, I'm constantly just trying to, because I hear what you're saying, and what I feel like also something you're tapping onto is the evils of capitalism, that that capitalism in and of itself from its roots was about exploiting people who were never meant to have access to the upper rungs of life. And even when I think, and I have to almost call myself slightly to this carpet a little bit, because I'm constantly trying to equip people with tools. And as the founder of TransTech, it was at heart because I was trafficked into sex work by all these adult website owners. Mm-hmm. And I eventually learned to run the websites myself and decided to get off of being on the website. And I was running the website. Now, you know, there's these layers to things where, you know, the lady who ran the website, okay, so it's so funny because it's so funny. I'm like, listen, what's happening right now, folks that are listening and folks that are going to be watching right now, what's happening is real-time accountability and a lot of different things. So just hold, stay with me for a second while I process what's happening here. But basically, like, there were these websites run by men and trafficked the girls into that space and paid them whatever little dollars they were getting paid, but it was what we could use to then pay for surgeries, pay for hormones, pay for our lives, you know. But they were exploiting us like crazy and selling the images like 20 times over, right? And so then there was a trans woman, this white trans woman, who had this sort of empire. And she was the person that we were facing and going in. And she was nice to us, you know, and she was one of the girls I could kiki with and what have you. But she had, you know, a pimp-like side to her, you know what I mean, that was a little bit like, watch out, you know. And so when I pulled myself out of that environment, created my own website, it was really with me and this boyfriend that I had at the time. So it was really just me posing on the website, just myself or with him. And then there were moments where I introduced other girls to the situation. And then it just got to be a situation where something in me, just for myself, I kept for my own personal journey from the streets to the internet to the nonprofit streets and to wherever I am now, I've been personally having this experience where I keep telling myself, I'm worth more than this. Mm-hmm. And so when you have nothing in a game that's rigged, one thing you should have, I believe, is bodily autonomy, is at the very least the choice to make choices with your body, to put boundaries around your body, to also put a value on your body so that men don't feel so free to take something from us that we are not offering. And so what to you does the middle way look like? You know, I'm talking now from a Buddhist perspective of somebody that, you know, because I always know whether you come from a Christian perspective and understand that God's not done yet, and that, you know, the spirit is still moving within these people's lives, and that challenges in and of themselves are the sort of biblical lessons that people talk about. And it's all about how we show up to those challenges, call on our human spirit, call on the strength and wisdom and all these things in those moments, no matter who we are. Mm-hmm. So doing the work that you do and bringing the knowledge that you brought now to this table as well, where there's a difference between what we're talking about of sex work and sex trafficking. And there's certain things that happen when we put those things together. And when we look at the lineage of what we're talking about, I hear you 1,000%. I hear you 1,000%. And I want to continue to educate myself and others on this so that we can reach a better plane for this in our society. What does that look like?
Well, you know, you talked about sort of the spiritual journeys and the explanations, but it really is, it's an evolutionary question of who we are as human beings in human history. So if you go back way back, because I'm first and foremost a women's rights activist, like my lens, the way I see the world, it's around women and girls and why they are still considered second-class citizens, right? Including, mm-hmm. you know, feminized bodies as well. So you go all the way back to ancient Mesopotamia, where there's this code called the Hammurabi Code. And it was the first legal document that codified the second class citizenship of women, that women belonged to either the father, the state, or her husband. And then, of course, you have everything. So what the Hammurabi Code did is that it influenced almost all of the legal systems, and it created the patriarchy, right? Or rather, mm-hmm, the patriarchy mm-hmm. created it. So all of our laws are surrounded around this whole concept of creating the other. So you have male dominance. And in the Hammurabi Code, it's also, as far as we know, the first codification of prostitution. And just to tell you a little bit about terminology, I don't use the word prostitute because what it does is that not only is it stigmatizing, but also it puts the burden, just like sex worker, it puts the burden on the person. It doesn't tell mm-hmm. the story mm-hmm. of what is happening to her and why it is happening to her and why the state is failing to protect her. So, you know, we don't have good terminology, but we use, you know, people in prostitution or engage in prostitution or in the sex trade or however.
Yes. Okay. And listen, this is the place.
Yeah.
Please. So let's take a pause for the cause. Please drop all of that terminology because this is the place for people to learn. Because, you know, the reason why a lot of people are upset, and it's funny that you are using this alternative language, because a lot of people are upset when we say things like birthing people. And sometimes we come up with these different languages because there are trans people and we need to, I think, be mindful of our language. I love what I think it's Don Miguel Ruiz, the author of The Four Agreements, talked about, be impeccable with our words and really understanding the weight, you know, that these things have. So, and I understand that's why you are coming up with these other, so drop a couple different terms other than prostitute.
I wish I had them. I mean, we just use, you know, people engage in the sex trade, or, you know, by the mm-hmm, time we talk about prostituted people or other, people are gone, you know? So we need to have mm-hmm. like a brilliant marketing mm-hmm. Slogan, just like the sex trade operators did to really depict this. But going back to the Hammurabi Code, what they did about prostitution, what they specifically said is we need to protect the honorable women from rape. And therefore, we're going to create this whole system so that men have still the opportunity for unfettered sexual access to women's bodies for the profit of the state. And then you have the whole industry of brothels and the whole sex trade that begins. And so that is what we're struggling with today. And so it's just the system of prostitution, the sex trade, is just one manifestation of the patriarchal system. Yes, capitalism has certainly aggravated it, but patriarchy is it's like the ground level on which, it's the rock on which we operate. And it's so hard for us to just, what we do is just, we chip at the block, but it's the house that is built and that we're trying to dismantle. So
the other day on my social media, I posted a video and it has since, just kind of gone viral again. And I knew it was going viral on her side. Amanda Seals also posted the video, but it's this Black woman. I think she's from London. And she's saying, I don't hate men. She's saying, I hate men who uphold the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And that's most men. So where does that leave us? And she said, let's be very clear. I think it's okay for people to hate the people that oppress them or that want to kill them, you know, folks were kind of like all in their feelings around the word hate and around, you know, just the container that she had put things in. Mm. And when she said, I don't hate men, I just hate men who uphold the patriarchy. What I realized from the people in my comment section was they don't, in some ways, patriarchy is not seen as the evil that it really is. And what, to the depths of what it does, I think that people think that patriarchy is just how the church feels about the man leading the house. And it's so much deeper than that. And it's the reason why it's so much deeper than that. Not only will we talk about the Meg Stallions and the Tory Lanez and all the things that happen. I want to ask you, just your observation, perspective, whatever, on this moment in our culture when you have someone like Andrew Tate, I think his name was, that was arrested finally for like sex trafficking. I think it was even like RICO charges and all kind of other stuff or whatever. However, there seemed to be such a culture. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be such a spectrum of our culture who very strongly saw who this dude is and what he's all about as wrong. And there is this greasy slide I won't say it was shocking. But for so many women to witness and watch so many men bend themselves and show themselves, I will say, reveal themselves in this moment. What did this moment say about our culture and, I guess, the distance between where we need to be in that evolution you spoke about?
Well, you know, you're... fingers are on the culture far more than mine. So, you know, it's a question I would ask you. Is it that everybody just feeds on pornography and just objectifies human beings and doesn't really, you know, you always have to follow the money. You have to follow the money. So these cultures of all types of phobias and misogyny have existed for a long time, but social media and the internet just radically, because I'm old enough to remember life before the internet. And so it has radically changed. Oh, hardly. So it has radically, radically changed the way we think, what we consume, the way we operate, the way we perceive each other, you know? So when you look at, I remember when my sons are men now, but I remember when they were little and then all of a sudden you had these commercials, like Fanta commercial, and you had these 8-year-old girls, Fanta, selling Fanta, so sexualized. And I just thought, what are my boys learning here? You know, that an 8-year-old girl needs to show her booty, which of which she had none, just to sell soda. That's just one example among many. But it's really hard when you've got the music industry and Hollywood and the porn industry, and you want to be free. And, you know, it's wonderful to be free and feel like your body is yours and you could express what you want whenever you want, however you want. But there's always a follow the money situation. And in that, you have people who are exploiting the vulnerabilities of others. And it's a very difficult question. I think it's a question that we ask ourselves every single day. Like, how do you stop this machine from putting the brakes on, you know? And mm-hmm. So we don't apologize for people like Jeffrey Epstein or Andrew Tate, or, you know, the list of abusers is longer than we have time to list. But it's like, yes. When has abuse become so glamorized? When and why?
I am so grateful for this conversation, because it's shaking me up a little bit, you know. And I think that's what we all need sometimes too. And that's what, you know, sometimes I think it's the reason why, to be honest, like, there have been moments, and I share these moments because I think that I'm not the only one who has had these moments. And also to show that I am also not perfect and not above these moments. But like, I remember seeing I think it was called On the Record. It was a documentary that was about this woman, Drew, who was an A&R executive in the hip hop industry, who was sexually assaulted by Russell Simmons. And I remember my immediate thought was, oh, I'm not going to watch it. And the reason why I thought I'm not going to watch it is because I thought to myself, I don't need to watch it. I already believe what she's saying. I already believe her. I believe victims. I believe, you know. So I was like, you know, I don't need to watch that. And wow, how wrong I was. Like, just because that's an act of turning away. And I didn't realize how easy it is. Mm-hmm. For us to turn away. And I think that is part of there is a machine, and we do need to follow the money, because we are being conditioned to respond. And it's so funny, because there's such a vitriol sometimes, and such a strong, adamant wave of vitriol for trans people, for Black people, you know, for all types of folks that we don't understand and hate. And it amazes me. It amazes me that it's never the same energy for actual sex offenders, assaulters, abusers.
That's the truth.
It's never the same. And for the actual, you could, I mean, moment after moment, we keep seeing another story about someone in religious spaces being found to be a predator. And we're not looking where we need to be looking. We're turning away, we're looking away, or we're putting a certain filter of enjoyment, entertainment, a filter of autonomy and choice, when what is the choice is that sometimes we're not even looking at what choices are we giving this person. And so I just, I'm going to sit with that. I am going to ask the folks listening to this podcast to sit with these questions, to sit with these things, because also, you know, I also want to bring, because I always, this podcast, No Opportunity Wasted. Again, it's in the efforts to bring about a new common sense. When we talk about these issues, it's in efforts to understand the power in these small moments in our lives and the opportunities and challenges that each one of us is faced with, but not just as an individual, but collectively as a society, we are faced with these challenges and how we evolve to better, not just to a maintenance point, not just to a point of putting a Band-Aid on certain situations, but how do we actually evolve to greater? And so for me, I'm not only trying to bring a space of general common sense to this space, but also a place of spiritual energy and focus, non-denominational, non, you know, because what I do know, and I always try to break down for folks, is do not let others outside of yourself claim dominion over something that is integral to your being, that is integral to who you are. We all have a source inside of us that gives us life, that gives us energy. And sometimes that energy is low, and sometimes that energy is high. Sometimes that energy feels a little more positive, and sometimes the energy has a little negative tinge to it. But when we look at things from a spiritual perspective, all I'm asking us to do is to develop a language and a response to be able to tend to that low energy or negative energy spirit. And so when we talk about those who have been trafficked into sex spaces, those you see me, I'm moving. I'm just saying those who have been who find themselves in this environment. And what I say environment, I'm saying that word specifically because on this podcast, I continue to explain how there's this essence, there's this element of oneness and environment where we are not separate from the environments that we find ourselves in, are in. We are not separate from the world we live in. We are but a reflection of the world and the environments that we're in. So for those who find themselves in these environments, that I want us to hold spiritual space and understanding that folks are wrestling too with the human spirit in these spaces, and that we need to have humanity and we need to have no judgment. Again, you know, I can't believe that a religion that has so much talk about God, you know, and not judging, how strong judgment is like a core principle in the way that people practice Christianity, in the ways that we create judgment. How have you been able to move in this environment and see the humanity in folks and not have judgment?
Well, I have always rested my strength and my source of inspiration from, one, my family. I'm unbelievably lucky to have a loving family, but also all of the survivors with whom we work and journey with, who, you know, make me understand that what is choice when there's an absence of choice? And why am I being, why is this injustice occurring with the blessing of the state, you know, people who are supposed to protect you? So I think it's, and it's also the future. I mean, you know, I'm in my third chapter now, as they say, and I think it's so important to, for me, I get a lot of inspiration from the young ones coming up who will just continue this journey of truth and of justice and equality for everyone. And we don't really know what equality looks like, smells like, tastes like. And I think that's part of the journey to mm-hmm. ask ourselves and make our political representatives and the policymakers and all the stakeholders grapple with the concept of equality and dignity and what that means for everyone. And that's hard. Again, when inequality and injustice is so embedded in so many of our institutions and in our culture and in our history, it's the inspiring part of the journey. And it's also the fun part of the journey. I mean, the work is hard, but I have had so much joy in just, you know, rolling up your sleeves and rolling in the mud and whatever I don't see in my lifetime, I know the generations to come may see it, you know? So that's what keeps my light on.
That is a beautiful way to think about it, because we understand the work will continue, beyond us. And sometimes I get frustrated because something in my life says, but I want to see a certain level, a certain type of change while I'm still here. And maybe letting go of, you know, those expectations or just what I may want to see for the world, and just continue to put the energy out to help us get there, to get to that vision. I want to thank you again for using your life for what you have used it for. We all have, like you said before, I think a calling on our life to respond. I think that life is that, a call and response. And so it's looking for us to figure out how are you uniquely responding to what we are faced with, what you're faced with in your immediate environment, but also when you get strong enough to realize that you have the capacity for more, how will you respond? And I just really am so grateful for how you've been responding.
Thank you so much, Angelica, and keep on, you know, trucking that journey. You have seen tremendous progress. It's a tug of war. You know, the pendulum swings, but we're there with it swinging. So keep on doing what you're doing.
Absolutely, we swinging. Absolutely, we swinging. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we will be right back. All right. So I hope that you learned something today from Taina being in MA. Thank you so much, Taina, for the work that you do. Thank you so much for enlightening me and opening my mind up to so much more, and understanding that while I do want to advocate for bodily autonomy, I also do not want to erase the real violence and harm that is happening to our children on the streets, and that's happening to people who end up getting trafficked into a space that now they're conditioned for. And sure, I don't want them criminalized for the choices that they're making, but as a society, I want us to do better. I want us to give better options so that, you know, work, something that we have to do to pay the bills, does not have to intersect with something so personal as our bodies. And again, to each his own, and to those who find, you know, empowerment, you know, spirituality, find power and strength and confidence in sexual and adult work, I support you in that. You know, Buddhism is not about judging. It's all about cause and effect. You know, I just want you to be in a situation where you are valuing yourself and the people that you are engaging with, making sure that they also value you and that you are staying as safe as possible. All right, so before we go, I want to drop just another Buddhist breadcrumb, and I'm going to break open this book of Faith into Action. You know, we had a really good Buddhist meeting today, and I was almost in tears kind of the whole meeting, because there were three different people who gave experiences, and what we call an experience is just someone who talks about how they are using the practice of studying Nichiren Buddhism, of chanting Nam-myoho Renge-kyo, never giving up, of how it's showing actual proof and benefit in their lives. And what I'm just so grateful for in being a part of this practice is our community is full of people who are basically vowing to never give up no matter what their challenges are. We have people who are leaders who are HIV positive. We have folks who are dealing with families who have addiction issues. We have folks who are dealing with their own addiction issues. We are folks who are dealing with housing insecurity and homelessness and all kind of things. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful moment to watch each of these people break through their challenges themselves and know that they don't need anything outside of themselves. Just like Tina Turner said, I don't need nothing but my name. Each of us are showing that we can muster up the wisdom, the strength, the courage, the effort, the will to do whatever is necessary to become happy in our lives. And so one of the things that I wanted to read about happiness is saying that happiness is not something that someone else, like a lover, can give to us. We have to achieve it for ourselves. And the only way to do so is by developing our character and capacity as human beings by fully maximizing our potential. If we sacrifice our growth and talent for love, we absolutely will not find happiness. True happiness is obtained through fully realizing our potential. So that is from Discussions on Youth, one of my favorite books. When we say youth, our youth division is for people 34 and under. So that is, you know, youth to us. It's a great book, though, no matter what age you are. But check it out. You know, I am trying to open myself up to dating, and I think, want to eventually find a partner. I don't know what that means. I really do enjoy being single and living alone with just my dog here. But I do remember there being a time in my life where I thought that finding the right person would, you know, bring me a certain type of happiness. And I was looking for that happiness outside of myself and looking for that happiness in someone else. And I can honestly say that I have surpassed that space, because I don't look for happiness in relationships and in other people or in anyone else. I really, truly have came to the understanding that only I can drum up an unshakable happiness, what we call absolute happiness from within. Something that no matter what my finances look like, no matter what my current location is, no matter who's around me, that I can always remain happy. So, no matter what you are going through, just know that you can become a light for someone else. Because guess what? You're probably not the first person dealing with the situation that you're dealing with right now. So, why not become someone who can have a story about how you courageously overcame that thing? Maybe it will become a book. Maybe it'll become a podcast. Maybe it'll become a movie that will inspire people around the world who are dealing with similar challenges, that know that they too can overcome their challenges. Whatever it is that you're going through this week, I want you to know that you can overcome anything. No opportunity wasted. See you next week. No.